versus Dunham. Mr. DeRose.
I can raise my chair just to be clean. Good morning, Your Honors, Counsel. Your Honor, I have to apologize first because I think this court has been very busy giving us a tsunami of a sea change in the ADA since I finished my briefs. If I can work backwards, just 11 days ago when the court ruled in the EEOC case versus United Airlines, it reversed opinions that have been on the books for quite a while, relying on the 2002 Supreme Court case, and came to the conclusion that accommodation through appointment to a vacant position is reasonable. And in my case, before this honorable court, we have been asking for an accommodation to any vacant position in that very large United States postal facility for years, only to be, when we go to work, under threats of being fired if we don't show up. We get sick and go to the hospital and are taken away, and the doctors wrote the kind of letters I'm sure Your Honors have seen in the brief about as emphatic as a letter as a medical doctor could ever write.
The problem is that this case wasn't litigated as an accommodation case. It was litigated as a retaliation case.
Yes, Your Honor. And that is the thrust of what His Honor ruled. But on the other hand, Judge, we contend, and we gave much evidence to the court, that from 2002 to the very present time, my client, they gave him notices of termination for failure to come to work on a regular basis. They suspended him, and each time they did that, they would go to a grievance procedure with their union, and they would reverse all that. There is no doubt that the management at the post office knew that this man's allergies were tremendously being impacted by the mold and mildew in that plant facility on the first floor. That facility in Bedford Park, Your Honor, is two stories tall and more than two blocks long. He asked for an accommodation. It was suggested by the defense. He wanted the accommodation of his choosing. That wasn't it at all. The doctor said in his letters, and my client said, can I go to the security office or any other position in the facility that'll accommodate my asthma? And then he took...
Did he ever ask for a transfer to another facility?
Your Honor, I don't believe so. He said anywhere else in this facility. Now, they don't have the mold and mildew everywhere. We had testimony that there are buckets to catch the water in the area where he works. But he asked, can I go to a clerical job? I did real good in English in high school, and I'm pretty good with the computers. Give me a clerical job then. And then he went and took training in auto mechanics so he could ask for a job, and he did ask for a job in the automotive department. And, Your Honor, they said, well, that position's already been filled. Most recent case clearly shows, just written 11 days ago, that if they've got a vacancy anywhere, he should be the first one considered, unless it's completely unreasonable or they have some other basis for it. And, Your Honor, a couple of months ago, in Feldman versus Olin, they had a tractor operator who couldn't stay on flex time. The court determined that because of his sleep apnea, he had a major life activity impact because he couldn't sleep. Well, in our case, my client's major life activity is breathing. I can't imagine any more important major life activity. And in that case, the court ruled that Olin Corporation could have and should have made the accommodations for him. The court set out the three principles used to determine if a person is disabled. One, that he has an actual disability that substantially limits one or more major life activities. Clearly, his doctors and even the post office's independent medical examiner all said this man suffers from such severe allergic reactions that he cannot be in that portion of the facility. Secondly, does he have a record of an impairment? For 7 years, he has a record of impairment, and that record is being given monthly, almost monthly, to the post office. And thirdly, does the employer regard him as having a disability or an impairment? Of course they regard him that, because their own independent examiner said, you must keep him away from mold, mildew, and spores because it'll affect him so bad in his breathing. Your Honors, all they had to do was find some other place for him. He suggested three places. And the accommodation committee, the chairman, said, I never convened the committee because I was told, oh, he's okay now. He's using an N95 mask in 2004. He was out of work for that year and a half. He couldn't have been doing that, and he gave an affidavit to his honor that he never wore an N95 mask in his life. And what did the chairman say? If I'd have known about these letters from the doctor, we could have done something different. We would have made him an accommodation. And then, Judge, third case that was decided just 2 weeks after I finished writing my reply brief. All three of these cases, by the way, they are right on point with what I'm trying to do. If I could just reach this paper. Elkstrad versus the school district on June 26th. Now, we had briefed this by 3 weeks earlier than that. The court decided that a school teacher was entitled to move to another classroom in the school that would have windows because she had a seasonal affective disorder. The court goes on in that opinion to indicate what her burden was going to be at trial. We could have met all of those burdens. Obviously, Judge Tinelli couldn't have known about those three opinions. When I read them, I grabbed them and put them on site, and then it just continues more. This Seventh Circuit has been telling us that this is what they now want us to look at. The judges will have to look at it a little bit differently. Clearly, the employers have got to look at it differently. And I would ask that the case go back to Judge Kennelly so he can take another look at this in light of Your Honor's three recent opinions that are right on point with what Mr. Anderson has been claiming all along. And just one last thing. The counsel says they're taken by surprise that we claim there are issues other than retaliation. Your Honor, our depositions were replete with our requests and the letters from the doctors telling how serious this problem was. And the doctor didn't want it in his conscience, and he suggested that the post office ought not have that on their conscience either. I thank you.
Thank you, Mr. DeRose.
Can I have 1 second to get
please. Take your time.
Let's grab the papers.
Mr. Kuhn.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, counsel, and the district court, as Judge Sykes already pointed out, Mr. Anderson raised a single claim that was timely raised, and that was retaliation. This was not an accommodation case. This was a retaliation case. Any other potential claims that he had were waived when he intentionally admitted them from not one but two of his amended complaints.
But they were in the earlier complaints, weren't they?
They were in the initial pro se complaint brought by Mr. Anderson. Once he hired counsel, his counsel filed two amended complaints, which were limited to the first amended complaint had a count for retaliation and also brought a tort claim. And the second amended complaint dropped the tort claim and went with a single count of retaliation. On that claim that he did properly bring, he failed at summary judgment to produce evidence sufficient to create a genuine dispute of material fact. The only contested issue of retaliation was raised by Mr. Anderson District Court was that of the causal connection. He didn't bring an indirect method of proof argument in the district court, and therefore he forfeited that. Of the branches of the causal connection that this court has set out, the only one that he argued on appeal is suspicious timing. He didn't argue similarly situated. He didn't argue any pretext. And what was not in only in his reply brief for the first time did he raise hostile work environment, forfeiting that argument as well. As far as the suspicious timing, his accommodation of his choice, which is to be assigned to do something other than handle mail, was not granted to him before he filed EEO activity, and the same as it was not granted to him after he filed EEO activity. Therefore, there's no causal connection between those two events. The accommodation.
Is there any support for the proposition that a unilateral failure to accommodate, where an official request for an accommodation has not been made, constitutes an adverse employment action that can amount to or form the basis of a retaliation claim? I'm having a little conceptual difficulty with this because I don't see an adverse employment action. He's initially hired in 97 as a part-time employee, and he has remained continuously employed by the Postal Service since then and to this day. At some point along the way, he's promoted to full-time.
Right.
He suffers no lateral kind of transfer or other reassignment that diminishes his job prospects and promotion prospects or anything of the like. He suffers no loss of pay, no demotion, nothing of that sort. So the only possible retaliatory thing that happened to him is this failure to accommodate, but the case wasn't litigated as an accommodation claim, and he never actually initiated a request for a formal accommodation, so we don't have that here, even if it were. So it's a unilateral failure to accommodate. In other words, the Postal Service didn't recognize spontaneously his need for an accommodation, which constitutes the adverse employment action that amounts to retaliation? That's
almost.
Sort of
in fact, during his tenure at the Post Office, while this is going on, he's been promoted.
Right, that's.
But in June of 2004, in 2004 when he first contacted an EEO counselor, he had just received a proposed notice of removal because he hadn't worked in a great many days. And that prompted his trip to the EEO counselor, and that was the adverse action that was raised administratively.
But he was, that notice of removal was rescinded.
Nothing ever came of it.
He's intermittently on some sort of leave during the course of these many years. Is it medical leave? Is it personal leave? What kind of leave is it?
Most of it is either absent without leave or leave without pay. In fact, from June of 2004 to January of 2006, he didn't work a single day. He was off. And that was a lot of the actions to try and suspend him, remove him, try and get him to stop missing work were going on.
So he's just AWOL.
He's right, correct. Just
and
just
suffers AWOL. No consequences for that.
Well, there were proposals made. Several were rescinded. Some went through the grievance process, and the arbitrator reversed some of them. Some of the suspensions were actually served.
Weren't those suspensions adverse actions? He suspended on several occasions for failure to keep a regular schedule?
Yes, those would be adverse actions. Some of those occurred before he went to the EO counselor more than 45 days, which wouldn't be actionable here. The ones that occurred after, and I don't believe there were any that actually occurred after. I think there were two or three proposed notices of removal that were filed, none of which ever took place. Because the Postal Service was trying to work with Mr. Anderson to get him back to work. The accommodation that Mr. Anderson actually sought was clean air, and that was provided to him. The Postal Service identified the source of the mold. They cleaned up the mold. They repaired it. They had extensive air testing done that showed the air inside the facility was actually cleaner than the air outside of the facility. Mr. Anderson's supervisor moved him to an area of the mail processing floor where he tolerated his asthma tolerated the environment better. They allowed him to use a dust mask if he so chose to help him. And he's, as Judge Sykes has said, he's still there today. In 2005, he did make a formal written request for some type of accommodation, an office job or to go to the security office. Michael Lee, who was the senior person at the plant, he testified that he checked and there were no vacant office jobs available. And after that point, Mr. Anderson never complained to him again, and he was operating under the honest belief that Mr. Anderson was functioning as a productive postal employee. There are several other claims that we argue were waived.
What reason was given for all of these absences?
Well, it
especially
was
the long one of more than a year.
The one for in excess of a year, he said his doctor told him he couldn't go to work.
Was that substantiated?
Well, there was some interaction between his physician, who, according to the record, rarely saw him, and the Postal Service doctor, who asked for some basis for some of the claims that this doctor was making. His doctor, the crux of his doctor's notes were he needed to be extricated from an environment that contains mold spores, toxic and noxious materials, which he was. The post office cleaned all that up, but that's all that his doctor said. And when his doctor was asked for documentation as to how he could say Mr. Anderson had a life-threatening asthma attack in the plant, he never provided any. When his doctor was asked,
but wasn't he removed from the plant by ambulance at least once?
There was one day that the ambulance met him at the front entrance and took him to the emergency room. That was blamed on the fact that there was open welding going on in the plant on that particular day. And there was a one-time occurrence. That is the only time he is, according to the records from the hospital, I think it's Holy Cross Hospital, that he had been taken there, been treated for any asthma-related problems at all. But when he was suspended for his failure to show up for work and maintain a regular schedule, the answers that he gave in response to the proposed suspensions were uncontrollable situations. I failed to look at the schedule. My babysitter was late. Traffic, car problems at a parent-teacher conference. And one situation said, I don't remember why I wasn't at work. So he was given plenty of opportunities. He just failed to take advantage of them. If there are no other questions, I ask to affirm the district court.
Thank you, Mr. Green. Mr. DeRose.
Can Your Honor tell me how much you're allowing me?
Indication is you have 1 minute, but if you need another minute, you may have that.
I can do it. I can confident in 2 minutes. Your Honor, there was a written request, and they're in the brief, by my client for accommodations. He said, can I get a light-duty assignment, a relocation to another portion of the facility? There are those letters there. Dr. Foggs, during that whole year and a half that Your Honor asked about, Dr. Foggs was writing letters requesting that Anderson be allowed to work in the security office or another alternate workspace he would be able to tolerate because of his asthma. And he says he has experienced life-threatening asthma attacks at the workplace. And Your Honors will remember that he specifically addressed a letter to the attorney doctor for the hospital, and it was Christ Hospital, saying that, as a matter of fact, I know of two times he has been to Christ Hospital within a two-week period, both for the asthma attacks. Your Honor, finally, the one point asked by counsel, we do believe it was an adverse action to mark him AWOL every year four or five times and to seek to have him terminated. All those were put aside because everyone in the room, when they went to the grievance, said, he's off, he's got doctor's letters here, he delivered them to his management, his doctor sent them wherever they wanted. And we all saw how very emphatic those doctor's letters were. I ask you, please, to let us go according to the way of your most recent decisions and send us back to Judge Cannelli and give us a chance to have the defense tell us why it is they couldn't find a place for us. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. DeRose. Thanks to all counsel. The case is taken under advisement.